He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
It is, and I want to start out this week's show with a comment that the airbag issue has risen again big time for Ford and also for General Motors after I had thought that most of it had quieted down because most automakers had taken care of the issue with the Takata airbag inflator problems many years back. Ford just got hit with a multi-million car recall requirement that I had not known, but they had been protesting and fighting since 2017, trying to avoid having to recall, I think it's 160 million vehicles, 2012 through 2016, maybe other model years too, to replace possibly defective driver's side airbags after having apparently replaced passenger side defective airbag inflators, but had not done driver's side, hoping they could avoid doing it. The real thing about this is that I don't know how many or how few people have actually been killed by airbag inflator problems, but I think given the multi-million numbers of Takata airbag inflators that were installed during this whole thing or prior to this whole thing unraveling and during the replacement programs that many auto manufacturers were forced to or voluntarily did to replace them, you know, avoiding a driver's side airbag inflator replacement is much more serious, in my opinion, than the passenger side because driver has to be in the car to use it, and if the driver gets hit by a malfunctioning airbag inflator, there's a lot more risk to life and limb damage than the passenger side would be, given that there are not many cars, or not as many cars, would be having passengers in the car at the same time the driver was using it. In any event, Ford is going to have to do it. It's going to cost them a lot of money. Apparently, GM lost a similar case back in November of last year, and presumably is already taking care of their airbag inflator recall requirements if they haven't finished them. So that's that on airbags. It just never goes away. You get these safety features in these vehicles, and then you find out that many years later, in many cases, that these so-called safety devices that are designed to save a life in a collision situation turned out to be also life threatening.
Let's agree that they've saved a lot more lives than they've.
Absolutely right, Jay. Okay.
Let's understand this. It's an expensive proposition for manufacturers. Airbags deploy right out of the steering wheel or right out of the dashboard on the passenger side, or curtain bags right out of the liners on the sides or out of the seats. And replacing those airbags is horrendously expensive, and that's why they're fighting it, obviously. But if you get a recall, take your car in and see what happens.
Correct. Okay. So, let's go to a car comparison discussion about Kia and Hyundai, big SUVs or crossovers or whatever you want to call them, vehicles that I've recently had occasion to inspect. Or a friend of mine who called me about replacing a car in their fleet or in their family. They were currently driving a Toyota Highlander, which they've had for many years, and they were going to go out and look at a new one. And I brought up the topic of these two makes, the Palisade and the Telluride, as an alternative, and got them to go test drive both, plus a Volkswagen Atlas and the new Toyota Highlander. I suggested that the Telluride or the Palisade might be an advisable alternative, and I got a reply back a few days back that they had done all these tests and that they had settled on a Telluride, only to find out that the Telluride model that they wanted is basically in short supply and selling right off the truck, and it's March before they can get one. The model they wanted, I had suggested that they ought to get it with heated seats since they live in a cold weather climate. And apparently the first model line above the base model of each of the Hyundai and the Kia models, well, the Kia Telluride is what we're focusing on here, is the X. And the X is the one that you can't find. You can find several of the base models around, but they don't come with either a sunroof standard or heated seats. But I went to look at both vehicles. I did not drive either, so I can't give a driver's report, but I can tell you that both of them are like the sister vehicles of earlier sister vehicles of Ford and Lincoln Mercury, in that they are basically identically dimensioned. They look quite similar on the road, different grills, different taillight treatments, and that kind of thing. But the magazines that had reported on both of those vehicles had distinctly different drivers' reports about the road quality or the riding quality of the vehicles, with the Hyundai being apparently more compliant and softer than the Telluride, which was more sporty. And this party that went to test drive noticed that distinct feature. I suggested what kind of test drive they should take each of the vehicles on, not do the standard, what I call the four right turn dealership test drive thing, where you go out and take four rights and you're back at the dealership in 5 minutes or so. And they did that. They found the roads they wanted to test drive them, and they found that the Telluride was much more sporty and felt lighter on its feet than the Hyundai, and they have proceeded to order one. That's about it on that particular line of models.
Well, let me chime in on this. It's interesting, is just last night I was talking with friends who have young kids in their 30s about in the market for a new family vehicle, and the Telluride and the Palisade came up. And just for our listeners, they are one and the same. They're made by one and the same company. They're made by Hyundai, both of them, and they are one and the same platform. Two different brands, slightly different looks, but the mechanicals are identical. But it is interesting what you pointed out about the riding quality being a little different from the Telluride from the Palisade. But in any event, when they brought this up, I thought, oh man, this is a big expensive car for a young family. So this morning I looked at prices, and both the Telluride and the Palisade have base model all-wheel drives starting in the mid 30s, $34,000-$35,000 for I didn't check out what if they came with a heated seats or not, but they do come with three rows of seats and satellite radio and a lot of the goodies that didn't even exist 10 or 20 years ago, and we're not even talking about safety features. And, $35,000 is actually less than the median price, which is around $37,000, of a new car in 2021. So they are extremely, extremely attractively priced. The warranties, as Robin, for having a Hyundai, are extremely generous as well, with 10 years, 100,000-mile powertrain warranties.
10-year, 100,000 mile. I think he's a 20.
Yeah, and a four-corner, I think, 5-year, 60,000 mile. So, and you're right. All the car magazines have tested them, and they both vehicles get great reviews. Now, you can opt them. I've also looked at them. I go on my favorite autotrader.com, and you can find the top-of-the-line models sell for a lot more money, and close to $60,000, $55,000 to $59,000 for a fully loaded Telluride or Palisade. So, there certainly is a range of trims to fit different budgets. Interesting to note, too, that right now, as of this morning, there are over 3,000 new Palisades, all-wheel drive Palisades, available in this country, and less than half of that in Telluride. So there's, I think, 12 or 1,300 Tellurides available. So the Telluride is definitely in high demand, and like you just mentioned, probably just sells getting off the truck. So that was my little tidbit on the Telluride.
Well, I'll add to that because I have a card here. I spent an hour at a Danbury Kia Hyundai dealership over the weekend, and indeed, talking about pricing, the Telluride 2021S runs around $39,000 new. Ironically, this is what the party that I was advising wanted, and they have to wait till March to get delivery of a S version at their dealership in Maryland. Identically, the same issue is at the same dealership in Danbury. However, I discovered that they had a 2020S Telluride CPO traded in, available for $34,982, has 29,000 miles on it. And it's been in service about 17 months, I guess, so it was in early 2020. But it had the heated seats, it had the moonroof and all that. And I told this party in Maryland, I said, it turned out that they had just put an order in for an identical model, turned to be the identical color, and their dealership all out was charging them $44,000. But that included tax and license in Maryland. Sales tax in Maryland for a car is apparently 6%. But I suggested that they might cancel that order and call up this dealership, and I don't know whether they did that or not, and they could get this CPO 2020, you know, delivered to them in Maryland for probably, and then they could get the license and taxes down there, and they could get it for under $39,000 delivered. Whether they do that or not, I don't know. But, Jade, just to the pricing part, this CPO got turned in on, there's something called a night-something version of the Telluride, which roughly is up in the mid-40s range, and the CPO is traded in on that vehicle by the person who had owned this, or the company who had owned this car. It did have 29,000 miles on it, which I thought for a 2020 was high. The salesperson said it had been in service for 17 months, so you divide that by 29,000, and they were driving, under 2,000 miles a month, but still a lot of miles for 1 year, and $34,982, or roughly $35,000, at their asking price, I don't know what they'll sell it for, is seemingly high against the new one, but still a lot less.
I think it's high. I think at that price point, you're better off getting a new vehicle. But
because the warranty, as you were just discussing, is exceptional in these vehicles. Powertrain, and they do not break down, basically. So you're still getting a good deal, even if they've got 29,000 miles on it. Sometimes I call it, some of these cars, as you and I both said, Jay, they're built so well, they can go, these cars today can go 200,000 miles if they're properly maintained. Without a lot of additional cost, probably beyond warranty. Enough on that. I want to bring up Bricklin before we let Jay take over this show, because my Bricklin is going to come out of hibernation, where it has been for 21 years.
What, did you sell your house, or are you just
cleaning out the garage? No, I did not, Jay. No, let's not get into that. I got contacted by a friend of mine who knew I had a Bricklin in the garage and wanted to know if I wanted to sell it. I said, well, I might, but it's been in hibernation. Anyways, we don't need to belabor this with the listeners. The Bricklin is going to be extracted from my garage either today or tomorrow and disappear to a body shop somewhere in southern Connecticut, where it's going to be operated on for however many weeks it does to bring it back into, I doubt it'll ever be showroom condition, but it's been told that it'll be brought back to a wonderful-looking vehicle and delivered back to me to do what I want with it. What is not going to happen, however, is the engine is not going to be restored, and I do not know what I'm going to have to do to make it operate again, because I do not think it will run without...
What was the engine in the Bricklin?
The Bricklin, there are probably a lot of listeners who weren't even born when the Bricklin was was produced. There were about 3,500 built between 1974 and 1975. And the 74s had an AMC four-barrel V8 engine, in it, and then they swapped out that engine for a Ford two-barrel 390 cubic inch, I think, or something like that, for the 1975 vehicle run before they closed down. Mine is an automatic. They did make a few, very few standard four-speed manual transmission vehicles in the 1974 and maybe the 75 line. I'm going to be going on camera for all this, apparently, at some point during the course of the day of this broadcast, of this taping day of this show. And we'll see what I look like on camera, too. But it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen to this car. And I will report more on future versions of this, of our show here.
The news crews are on their way to Sharon.
The crews are here.
I said the news crews. Television crews.
Yes, the TV crews are here. They're already doing an entry. I sent you a picture of the car that's sitting in my driveway, Jay. And they're using that car as they're doing takes coming in my driveway. They've done three so far because of the lighting. And I was told not to do anything to the car, not blow it, not inflate the tires, which may or may not hold air. And three of the four are flat. The fourth one does have some air in it.
So, Robin, is that Porsche Macan your new vehicle?
I knew you were going to ask me that. It is not my new ride. It is the TV crew, members of the TV crew or the crew that's doing this whole thing. And it's going to be several hours today before this car actually gets out of the garage because the garage is an absolute disaster inside. But they did not want me to clean it up and make the car extractable. They wanted
so
to this, do
this is what we call a barn find.
Yes, it's a barn find. So it's happened to the Bricklin. It's become a barn find, and we're going to see what they do to restore it to at least the body part of it to a pristine condition.
I think you better call the local police force to direct traffic on your street because people are
nobody knows
driving
where my street
there
is, and it will remain a secret for this show.
I have not said a thing. That's great news. I'm happy to hear that.
I am happy to do it, too. I've been wondering what I was going to do with this vehicle. I had it last restored in approximately 1999. I purchased my current address in 2020. I drove the vehicle from its last point of restoration into the garage back in 2020, where it has sat ever since.
Not 2020. That was last year. You're talking 2000.
I mean, sorry, 2001. Or 2000, the year 2000. 2000, it went into the garage and has never moved since. So
21 years.
Yeah, 21 years.
That's good. It's always good to pull something out of
it. But it does not look like it. It does not look now like it looked when it went into the garage. I can assure the listeners of that. So we're going to see what this a garage find group is going to do to it.
I can attest to that. But that's great news.
It is great news, and I think I'll probably have to be responsible for getting it running again, which I probably will be quite willing to do. And then we'll see if I can. We'll see if any Bricklin people throughout the country have any interest in a restored Bricklin at any kind of price worth letting it go. But I'm ready to let go of it. Jay, what do you have to say today?
Well, I was just looking at the news. We know Stellantis, the new Fiat Chrysler.
Management.
And a Peugeot merger is now underway. What is it? His name? Carlos Tavares, the CEO of the new Stellantis Group, has 38 high-ranking executives reporting to him. And it's going to be interesting to see in the years to come. There is talk about whether or not to sacrifice a few brand names, and the ones that do come up, at least on the U.S. market, are Chrysler and Fiat. They may stop selling Fiats in the U.S. market. I don't think the brand is going away just yet.
I reported on that in last week's show, which you were absent on. There's going to be one or two versions of the Fiat 500 still apparently produced, something called the 500X, which you know is a larger version of the original Cinquecento Fiat that they were started out with, which was two-door, like the Mini Cooper two-door when it started. And I guess it's selling at some level, or it's being produced, will continue to be produced for Italian use and maybe American use, because it is a functionally usable vehicle, much like the Mini Countryman with four doors and all-wheel drive, for those few people who want to keep buying the Fiat.
Yeah, let's be clear. It's going to be irrelevant.
It's going to be irrelevant. I agree.
The strategy for the U.S. market is to keep pushing Rams and, interestingly, bring the price point of Jeep models up. And as we know, Jeep has done a good job at bringing those price points up with, you know, what did we have? Wrangler selling for $70,000. That's what they're trying to do.
Our earlier conversation about the Palisades and Tellurides and your price description, when I reviewed what I found out in the Connecticut Kia place, I realized that those vehicles in the lines that are most popular between $35,000 and $40,000 are less expensive than many of the Jeep Cherokees, Grand Cherokee vehicles, lines that are carried in dealers' lots. And they're much smaller vehicles. So, as you said, price points are all over the place and good buys are all over the place. And you can get something like the Telluride and Palisades level vehicle for under $40,000, and they give you a far more family use practicality than the smaller Jeep Cherokees and other American brands of these vehicles can be. So it's interesting that Jeep wants to put the price point up. We reported on the new Grand Cherokee L that's coming soon to a dealer near us, and I can't wait to see it. I think it's going to be a very well-designed and well-accepted vehicle.
But the starting point, and this is the interesting thing, the starting point is going to be $10,000 more than a Telluride.
That's correct.
And that's so just
they
the
got
starting
a big,
point.
They got a big, you know, people buy on what they can get for the best buy for their money. So
before we go, I do have a safety tip.
Good.
If we it's all about the driver. And meaning it's about how we drive, how we go about driving every day. If you are driving to work every day, you actually know how long it takes to get there. And if you give yourself just 5 minutes more time to get there, if you decide to leave 5 minutes earlier, you will realize that your drive is a lot less stressful. And when we are less stressed, we make less mistakes. And it is surprising to see if you're not in a hurry to get somewhere and you're following somebody who's driving 2 miles under the speed limit, all of a sudden you go like, oh, okay, well, it is what it is. And on the other hand, if we're running a few minutes late, it you get ready to honk the horn, you're trying to pass on a double line or not, and all of a sudden you start making bad decisions behind the wheel. So give yourself time to get where you're going.
Good points all around,
Jay. And the driver's gonna be a lot safer for everybody.
I know exactly that. All those things you mentioned, if you know where you go from point A to point B, home to work or work to home, in my drives between New Canaan and Sharon, several days of each week. And I have learned that if I go 72 miles an hour on 684 and 62 miles an hour on 22 portions where you can do so before you run into somebody going a little slower or whatever the traffic burden may be, it is much more relaxing at those speeds as I watch people zoom by me on 684 at 75 to 80, rushing to work. And I know that at 60, you know, 72 and 62, respectively, with a slightly lower average for the 63 miles door to door, I do it in a comfortable an hour and 24 minutes, it's very easy and I'm rested as opposed to racing to get to a particular point on time and leaving 5 minutes late and trying to make it up because you can go faster than the speed limits on most of these roads. But well taken, and I hope a lot of listeners will take your safety tip to heart.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.